It's time for ESPN Las Vegas legal insider Justin Watkins with Battleborn Injury Lawyers, only on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Justin Watkins is here. What's going on?
Oh, I'm happy to be here. I can't believe Alex showed up. I'm, you know, has to face the music. You know, in honor, now that I've beaten the best handicapper in all of Las Vegas, I've decided I'm going to wear the Scally cap in honor of Dave Koken. I'm an official handicapper now. 3-1 on the
way
to the listeners. Yes,
I wear
Scally caps now. I wear Scally caps now.
Put on a Koken hat.
I put on the Koken hat from here on out for all football season.
I will not steal. You will not steal his moniker, which was the man under the hat.
No,
man under the cap. Can't do that.
No, I don't want that. I'm paying homage to him.
Look
at you. I'm not trying to steal his identity.
This guy's coming in with props.
That's right.
Freaking Carrot Top on the show.
That's right. Hey, you go 2-0 against Alex. It may never happen again. So we'll see what happens this week. I have to take it while I got it, because, you know,
why not?
She's only going to get better. There's no way I'm going to get any better.
We just called you out about 5 minutes ago. I did, for your UCLA.
Yeah.
Utah take. One of your takes was, I trust the guy from Tennessee, not the guy from New Mexico quarterback.
I know.
Uh-oh. Yeah. Devin Napier is really good.
He is good. Yeah. I mean,
and Nico's still very developmental.
Yep. And, I mean, I think, obviously, I think this actually about Utah, most in almost every game, they're going to have the coaching advantage. I think Whittingham's just awesome. Yep. I mean, I just think he's a really good coach. I think he's rock solid. I mean, I think he's got a long track record of success, and he's super steady.
And Alex, you mentioned the OC.
Yeah. Beck came over from New Mexico as well and called a great game there. I mean, he didn't put Dampier in any bad spots, right? And
yeah.
Now I do think they're live for that conference.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I think so too.
So middle of the day, I see some back and forth between Dabo Swinney and Brian Kelly.
Yeah.
And I'm ready to go off. Because I'm probably one of the few Brian Kelly defenders. I think it's over the top, the criticism on him. And Dabo drives me nuts. And so I see this. Dabo talking about the game, comparing it to exams. Clemson loses. Dabo says, quote, they made a 65, we made a 58. Like, that's the grade. Neither one of us were great. Brian Kelly is told about this and goes, we dominated them in the second half. So either he's a really good grader giving himself a 58, or he's a really hard grader on us. From there, I was like, you know what? Can I see the whole quote? And I'm doing this. We should all do it in the media. But I'm doing it more and more now. Because while I've blamed content creators for clipping something and just putting that clip up and not giving us the full content, now some mainstream outlets are starting to do it. And I'm gonna call out CBS Sports, and I like what they do. But I thought they clipped a UNLV safety comment about Nico. The whole comment wasn't put out. If you want to see the whole comment, Amaris Brown said not really anything impressive, or I forget what it was, about Nico. That wasn't the whole clip, so I put out the whole clip on video at Steve Cofield. Boy, what they had, the story over the weekend was, they kept going with a headline. Basically, teammates didn't like Micah Parsons. And then when you clicked on the story, it said some teammates didn't like. That's a big difference.
Yeah.
And like, in mass, like, the whole team didn't dislike Micah Parsons. Others were bothered by him.
Some were bothered by him. Yeah, some were bothered. It wasn't even that they didn't like him. I think it was more bothered by...
His arrogance in the podcast.
There you go.
It's not the entire team. So you're...
Sure.
Like, that's not fair. Well, no, I want good.
And you're doing it just in the instance of when he's doing a holdout in the middle of preseason. If you're asking people right at that moment when he's laying in the back of a bench in the middle of a preseason game, yeah, they're probably a little bothered by that.
Right.
So it's like context and timing are both important as to the quote.
Griffin, give us the full Dabo.
That is a physical group. It is a very smart quarterback. And that is a back. So they're going to be a problem. And they got some explosive dudes, and it was a hell of a game. It's like getting the final exam day one of class. They made a 65, we made a 58. Neither one of us were great.
Okay, compliment, 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 compliment. Then the comment about grades.
Yeah.
And that neither one of us were great. Anyone who watched the game knows, offensively, neither one was great.
Yeah.
That is totally fair. Now, I'm guessing Brian Kelly was then fed, hey, these are the grades he gave you guys, and said, neither one of us was great. Go ahead, Brian Kelly.
We dominated him in the second half. So he's either a really good grader for, you know, giving himself a 58, or he's a really hard grader on us, or he didn't see the second half, which that might be the case. He might not have wanted to see the second half.
So he really comes at him. Yeah. But I don't know if he heard the four compliments. Maybe he did.
I'm sure he didn't. But, I mean, the thing that I came to mind when I heard the Brian Kelly quote is I would embrace that. Be like, yeah, we got room to grow, and he even sees it. You know, we just beat a top 10 team on the road, and we've got a whole three set of grades to improve. I agree. We're only going to get better from here on out. That's where I would have gone with it. You know, I think he could have, or if he wanted to parse it out and say, yeah, I think we were in the 50s on the first half, and maybe we were in the 70s in the second half, and that puts us in the 60s for the game. I'll take it. We won the game on the road in a hostile environment, and I'm ready to move on.
And by the way, when I'm making a statement about people, I should get the headline right for CBS. I'm looking back now. They have changed it to Micah Parsons reportedly viewed by some Cowboy teammates as egotistical, self-centered before Packers trade.
Yeah. How many some? At what level of?
This is another great one. Yeah. This is another great one because I'll go back to another crazy thing that took off on the internet. Remember the Caitlin Clark reaction by the players around the WNBA? The Athletic was the one who did that poll. It was 13 WNBA players who voted.
Jeez. Yep.
And she was the seventh card. 13.
Yeah.
But that is almost never mentioned.
Right.
Just like the entire league voted on her.
Yeah.
Said seventh best card.
Yep.
13 players. Stop. But it's also why I will tell people all the time, like, the media does this. The media. It's not everyone. Okay?
Sure.
But I can't win that battle. But nope. I try to bring up cases where I see it and it really pisses me off. It bothers me. Okay. I thought for years, this is my opinion, I don't have any factual evidence, that the Patriots had worked a special deal with Tom Brady over the years, and I don't know if he was going to be the minister of fun for the Patriots for the next 25 years, but it always seemed like Tom took it in the shorts a little bit, gave him a little break on the salary, right?
Yep.
I have no proof of that.
Yeah.
What the Clippers have done here, allegedly, with a no-show job, with a kind of a shell corp, that it seems like Steve Ballmer's behind, they may have juiced him up $28 million for a no-show job in the NBA. This is in college sports, in the NBA.
So I watched the whole podcast, and he went.
This is Pablo Torre who broke the story.
Yes, and he went. He had a stack of documents, and he went through with Dave Sampson, which was awesome. They're back and forth in this regard, and Sampson getting shown the documents in real time and like analyzing them real time and his perspective on it. And so it's a very complicated net, actually. What it ultimately comes down to is a couple of Harvard grads who decided to be brokers for selling carbon credits to businesses so that those businesses could say that they were carbon neutral. Now, the business still had a carbon footprint, but for every, you know, so many dollars they spent, a tree would be planted to offset, quote unquote, their carbon footprint. That was the business they were in. They were literally just brokers of tree planting and businesses just so that they could publicly say we are carbon neutral, even though they themselves were not. They were just purchasing carbon credits from somebody else. Ballmer knows these guys, invests in them, and there are a number of high-profile investors, invests in them, and then the company is one of the founding donors, advertisers for the Intuit Arena when Ballmer's building it. And they do a $300 million sponsorship name rights deal. At the same, like, few months there later, they are trying to negotiate with Kawhi on an extension. Kawhi does a four-year extension, which is surprised everybody. They thought he was going to go real short or real long, and he went in the middle of the road. And they were like, huh, that's, you know, basketball insiders were a little bit perplexed by it. He signs an endorsement deal with this company for $28 million. The term is 4 years, just like his player contract. $7 million a year with no deliverables. There's only one figure in there that has any deliverables, and that's 50 autographs. If we ask, if it's not against your beliefs. That's it. He has an out clause that if anything that is asked of him is against his beliefs and beliefs aren't defined, he doesn't have to do it. And he still gets the $7 million. The only thing that that puts in jeopardy his $7 million is if he's no longer on the Clippers. Then he loses it. So there obviously is a ton of smoke here. Ballmer is a direct investor in the company. The company then benefits, you know, his team, the Clippers, and his star player gets another $28 million that's not counted against the cap. And he stays on with the Clippers. The deliverables are nothing. He has to do absolutely not a single thing more than he's doing on an everyday basis to get this extra $28 million. And in fact, by, you know, Pablo's 6 month of investigation of digging into, he did absolutely nothing. Pablo Torre spoke to a dozen. This carbon footprint company goes into bankruptcy. That's how Pablo Torre got a hold of this information, because Kawhi Leonard's LLC was a creditor for $7 million. Yeah. So then that's how he starts piecing all this together. There's 12 former employees who Pablo Torre spoke to, one who he got to agree to go on the record with voice and image distortion. And they basically were like, yeah, no, he didn't do anything. And he eclipsed every single endorsement deal of people that we did have doing stuff. If you combined all actual endorsement deals and tripled it, it still didn't meet the amount of money that they gave to Kawhi Leonard, and he didn't do anything. And when we were in financial trouble, every weekly meeting was, okay, make sure Kawhi's paid. And then we worked about everybody else. So the insinuation is, and that employee said, when questioned, why are we doing this? It's like, it's a circumvention of the salary cap. It's got nothing to do with us. It's just part of whatever's going on over there.
Oh, wow.
So there's clearly smoke. Now, you got an owner coming out right after that, Mark Cuban, who says, nah, I don't believe it. There's no way Ballmer's this stupid. If he was running money through this corporation to pay his, he would never have let it go into bankruptcy. Because once it goes into bankruptcy, everything's public. Huh. He wouldn't have been that dumb. So these scammers probably scammed him too.
No.
That's what Cuban's saying. So it's like, on the one hand, Cuban's saying, Ballmer's too smart for this, but he's dumb enough to get scammed. You know, so it's really, so Pablo Torre reached out to Cuban, said, can I have you on the show? And Cuban said, yep. So that'll be sort of the next phase of what we see here. But if the NBA doesn't go hard on this, then what's going to happen with the NBA is exactly what's happening in college sports, which is the richest ownership groups are going to just, the cap will be non-existent. They'll just circumvent it through, these are literally shadow NIL deals. It's the same thing as college. You don't have to do anything. We're going to pay you money for your name, image, likeness, but we're not even going to use it. That's exactly what's happening in college. But if you're a player and you're the Players Association, you don't want them to do any of this stuff because it's just more money for you guys.
Right.
College football play is coming up. We've got a super volatile game to get into where the number has been all over the place. That game is Michigan and Oklahoma. I think we're going to go head-to-head on ASU and Mississippi State, and then Kansas and Missouri. So some picks on the way. We're live here at the Battleborn Broadcast Center. Of course, Battleborn Injury Lawyers. Give them a call, 766-1400 in Northern Nevada. Dial 775-766-1400.
Live from the Battleborn Broadcast Center, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Now it's time to get to the nitty-gritty.
Here we go.
On a Wednesday, which, by the way, this block of the show will also have our Circa Million picks every week.
Okay.
But I'm a little delayed because I have to get the board for the odds this week.
So okay.
I didn't have that ready to go for the show. But we are going to do college football and some NFL head-to-head every week with the Dave Koken protege. He actually put on a Kangol hat, Justin Watkins, and the winner of many contests. The only female, or is there multiple females? We have confirmation on this in Circa Invitational. We got to look at the whole field because I know the field was only like half set a while ago. We'll find out on that one. But Alexandra White is here. Last week, you guys went head to head on some games.
Yeah.
Not great for me.
You were on the wrong side?
Well, I guess I went 1-3. if we're counting UCLA. Yeah.
You went 1-3. But I'm just talking about our head-to-head.
Right.
2-0 for the good guys. Right? It was Auburn.
Well, we were both... Yeah, you had Auburn.
Right.
And you had LSU.
Correct.
Yes.
You both had Nebraska, Cincy. You had Cincy.
Yes. Yes, and we won that one.
And we both had Miami.
Right, okay. And we both had UCLA against Utah. That was our loss.
Okay, so head-to-head, yeah, okay.
2-0.
I like that. I can come back from 0-2.
After 1 week. You sound pretty confident. Yeah, okay. Yeah. It'll be okay,
I mean,
Justin.
I felt so good about myself that after each game, I just sent Alex a text.
Oh, you did?
Alex.
What are you doing? This is great. Wow. Okay, we come out of the gates with Stanford and BYU. BYU's laying, I had 18.5 this morning.
That's what I got.
Okay. So what are we doing here?
I mean, I take a BYU. I think Stanford is incredibly poor. I think where I'm going with this is BYU has a ton of animosity towards Stanford. Stanford kept BYU out of the Pac-12 when they were trying to ascend. And it was because of their ideology specifically. And it was specifically Stanford that did it. So BYU hates Stanford. Hates them.
There's no
hate. And there's no way.
No hate to the church. Cut it out.
There's no way they're going to let them escape off this schedule without piling on the points, and they have the team that can do it.
They definitely do. I've got it about 15. I don't know if this is going to make one of my cards, but 18.5 is a little tempting because what I saw from the game when they went to Hawaii, they can run the ball. Now, they went away from that, and when they actually had the lead and it came down to the end, they tried to throw it, got into some trouble there. But they can run the ball. They can run out the clock. So that makes
each
point. I'm
seeing that 20.5 now. So at 20.5, you go the other side.
Yes. You mean?
It's 20.5
right now. It's 20.5 now?
Yeah.
Oh, 21 at some places. That's a good number.
I would lean still laying it.
Yep.
I don't like it. So I can do a leaner like, but I understand. I don't know about the hatred thing, but I don't think Stanford can throw the ball. And I think Hawaii's okay. Give Stanford credit because, you know, people will be like, oh, the quarterback was hurt. Well, they hurt him.
Yeah.
So they were physical, but I don't know if they can throw the ball.
I mean,
but on the other side, and this is why I just like it. I'm sorry, lean with it, not like it. It is a freshman quarterback. He did look okay, Bachmeyer, in game one. So.
Yeah. I mean, I told you, BYU is my 25-1 pick to win the Big 12. So, I mean, I got to imagine they're going to pile on the points here.
Arizona State.
Is that counting as one of our head-to-heads, though?
Nope.
No.
Okay, good.
Come on.
That's
25-1.
Which one, the 25-1 or this game we just talked about?
Game we just talked about.
No. Okay. There's only two head-to-head unless there you guys come up with some others. Arizona State laying 6.5 at Mississippi State.
I got the dogs. Six and a half. Give me the 6.5.
Dang. If it was 7,
okay,
I might be there. I'll take the favorite in this one. But this is tough because Mississippi State did go to Arizona last year, and that's before we knew about them and Kenny Dillingham and what he had done with that program, right? They were up by a pretty big number, and then they kind of called off the dogs, and they let them back in there. They won that game by 7.
Yes.
It's going to be a different story going to Starkville, right? And it's going to be a tough environment. I don't like how they're prepping, which we'll probably talk about later, but they are trying to do some cowbells at practice and stuff. I still think this Arizona State has a lot of talent. So I think they could win by a touchdown.
Me too, but I also think that, I'm not a believer in the Big 12. I don't think that playing games in conference in the Big 12 is anything like playing a road game in the SEC. And I think... You know, it's not like they're – if this was in Arizona, then, yeah, I think it could be a double-digit number for Arizona State to win the game. But I really think that they're going to have a hard time. I wish the number was 7.
Yeah.
But I'll take 6.5.
I actually got to be careful. I just checked, pulled up my spreadsheet with my main numbers because I didn't go through every single game yet. I made it 5, so I'm, like, right there. And I don't know. Be closer to taking the dog. You have to be careful, and I have to be careful, because in college, and you're doing good with this, it's a lot about spots. It's a lot about, you know, look-aheads, letdowns, travel, and things like that. So I think the points are probably even more valuable here in this one.
So now we're not head-to-head.
Mississippi State.
You go Mississippi State. Hey, look at this. Look at this. The cap works. I convinced her. I brought a pro. I have brought a pro over to my side talking a bunch of nonsense. This is great. I love it.
Border war. This one's really intense. Kansas and Mizzou really freaking hate each other. I think Lance Leipold's amazing as a coach, but I also hate to say it. Drinkwitz is really good. I guess my question is, how real is Bo Pribula? They played no one last week, but he looked pretty good. I don't trust Daniels. I know it was a back injury that had him, you know, performing underwhelmingly the last couple of years. This number is big, though.
I'm on the exact opposite side of the very argument I just made. I'm going to take a Big 12 team on the road against Missouri, but like for the reasons that you stated, I have it at 6.5. I wish it was 7, but I'm gonna take the dog here. I don't love this one. I don't love this one, but I'm gonna stick with it.
I think I'm with Steve on this, and I'm leaning towards the favorite at home. I just think Missouri has more talent on this roster. I am a big believer in Pribula too, because I mean, even when he stepped in last year at Penn State for Drew Aller, I thought he was awesome and never let the moment get too big. So I think he'll be ready in this one. Kansas, we might be overreacting just a little bit. They've looked awesome. They've had two games already, right? They played week 0.
Yep,
Fresno.
So yeah, they've
and just, Fresno's not very good.
They've looked really good. They did get a win this past weekend, though. That was a good win for them, but. Because it was an overreaction from how crushed they got from Kansas. But, yeah, so I would go Missouri, as long as it's under a touchdown.
I don't feel good about that one, which means I'm probably going to win it. I have no good – I can't counter any of the arguments you just made, but I bet it, so I'm sticking with it.
Big-time programs with Michigan on the road against Oklahoma. There's a 4.5. There's a 5.5. Michigan is the dog. Bryce Underwood, true freshman, got his feet wet last week. They didn't exactly destroy New Mexico, and I think John Mateer's tremendous, and Oklahoma's calling card is defense. What do you guys think?
I got Oklahoma here. I'm willing to lay the 5 points at home. I don't think Michigan's that good. I really wasn't impressed with them against New Mexico last week at all. To me, this one seemed like a good number. I would have expected this to be up somewhere around 7 or 8. At 5,
wow.
I'll take it at 5.
Let me see what I actually did make it. But I think we're all in agreement on this one.
I didn't say I was picking Oklahoma.
Oh.
Uh-oh.
Oh, okay. You said John Mater, the new quarterback, was awesome.
I like John Mateer, but
thank you, Mateer.
My lean would be Michigan.
Ooh.
All right.
Okay.
I think there's a lot of pressure.
What did you have the number, Alex?
There's a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
5.
On Venables.
You had the number 5. It's right on the number.
Right there.
So you're not. Does that mean you don't play?
That means I don't play it. I like a 2.5 difference from my number.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And even more if we get to double digits.
Okay. I just like to sling.
But I do. I think I'd lean to Oklahoma. Michigan still has to prove some stuff there.
Alex White, Justin Watkins. We're doing some college football picks, a couple NFL games. All right. I saw Sam Houston State up close last week, and they're going against Hawaii.
Yeah.
I think I'm leaning Sam Houston State plus 6.5 because I'm still very worried about the health in game. How much practice time he's getting of Micah Alihato, the freshman quarterback from Gorman with Hawaii. Again, he's wearing the boot. He's not practicing a lot. I think Sam Houston State actually will – I'm not sure what they're going to do with quarterback.
Right.
Because they have a running quarterback who cannot throw the ball well. The guy, Phil Longo, brought in a dude who was a 5-star who was at Wisconsin, and he actually threw the ball pretty well. He's not super mobile. Yeah. I think he's got to decide what he's going to do. And he wants to run an air cat. You know, he runs the air raid.
Yep.
Yeah.
The holdover quarterback who can run can't do it. So I think if he – I want to see the other guy play more, and then I think they can stay in this game. I don't know if they win it. I mean, will the road trip have an effect? I don't think so.
That's where I'm at. Is like every time people go to Hawaii, that travel from Texas to Hawaii, what's what, 4 time zones right now? Or is it? Yeah, it's 4 now. That's probably – I'm sure it's going to be their longest road trip. They're coming off of 2 losses. They're 0-2. Hawaii is at least 1 a game at home.
And I will say Sam Houston's defense is not good.
Right. I don't think their quarterback has to be here. They don't have to have their quarterback be 100% in order to score. So to me, anything under 7, I was like, yeah, I'm in. So I took
Hawaii. Alex?
You took Hawaii.
Yeah.
I'd probably lean Sam Houston State because this number has been all over the place. And Hawaii should have been an even bigger favorite. I think they were supposed to be like 9. So that's already baked into it. I think you can get 7 now.
Oh.
Yeah. So
I'll take 7. Not 6.5. No, we're doing the number at 6.5.
6.5.
Okay.
Actually, as we hash through this, we probably should pick the number. The official number on Stanford and BYU that we're going to go with is 21.
I have 18.5. That's why I bet it.
We're going to go 18.5.
Okay.
All right. A couple NFL spots.
But funny enough, the last two games we went head to head on last week We're both 6.5. And our heads-to-heads this week are 6.5.
Mm.
So that's my lucky number here. So I'm looking to go 4-0 head-to-head against you.
Clemson was 3.5 and then got bet up that day.
Yeah, right? It was 6.5 when we talked about it.
Oh.
What?
Yeah.
No?
No, I don't think it ever was.
5?
No. It was 3.5.
Oh, week. I can look.
But yeah. They did get bet up that day. I think it was like 4.
Okay, maybe I'm wrong, man.
But.
Let's see.
You're wrong. Yep, on the way back, we're going to get into some NFL spots. Texans and the Rams. Want to hit on Monday Night Football with the Bears and the Vikings. And then I also have to run a William Hill prop or a set of props by you guys. Boy, PFF has Ashton Jeanty for a monster season. And actually, the prop from William Hill, I guess it's kind of baked in. I don't know, man. Rookie running backs. I'll give you my lean or like on the way back. And Justin Watkins is here. Alex White. It's Cofield and Company. Moving past the halfway point on a Wednesday.
Live from the Battleborn Broadcast Center, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
I love it. The showdown every week with Alexander White and Justin Watkins. The pro versus the Joe.
That's right.
Right. Last week, the Joe did just fine. Okay, NFL. We got a couple minutes left here. We're going to catch up with John Von Tobel in just a couple minutes. Texans and Rams.
So I think the Texans are a pretty good team. I'm worried about the health of Stafford and what they allow him to do or what he's even capable of doing. Week one feels a little bit like a crapshoot at times. I didn't love any of the games on there. There's only two that I bet. And I took the Texans in the points. It's plus three.
I do think that is a good number. I'm pulling up mine right now. So, all right, I got the Rams, but I think he makes some good points with the uncertainty with Stafford. On the other side, though, I'd like to see the Texans' offensive line because gave away their best piece, make some cap space room this offseason. So, and then we have question marks with the running back with Mixon. So that makes me a little bit nervous, but I'm excited to see his new weapons. And I do think that CJ Stroud will be better this year. So I like them long term.
Mm-hmm.
This first game, you're right. It's a tough one. So with NFL, though, if you're leaning, I think you got to take points.
Let's look at it in Monday Night Football. Bears-Vikings.
So I think that, again, it's a little bit of a crapshoot on is J.J. There's an assumption of some of the public out there that, well, J.J. McCarthy's going to at least be equal to Sam Darnold and maybe better. And I don't know that we know that. And he has injury history. And it is going to be his first game. It's on the road. And so I like the Bears here. You're only getting 2 points. I don't love that number. I wish it was 3. But you're getting 2 points. I got the Bears at home against essentially a rookie quarterback. And I got a revamped offense, tons of weapons. I like the way that Caleb Williams looked in preseason, his timing and getting the ball out of his hands. So I don't know that the Vikings are going to be able to hold up like they did last year and everybody's assuming that O'Donnell can make a star out of anybody. We'll see. I think this will be a test.
I think I like that side too, taking the points here with the home team. Kind of to your point, you're looking at, okay, first-year head coach or first-year quarterback with a rookie in J.J. McCarthy, no Jordan Addison. Justin Jefferson, hamstring injury all through the offseason, preseason, so don't know how 100% he's going to be. So, yeah, I think the Bears here in the first week come out strong, can at least be competitive in this game.
Sweet. Alex is co-signing on to my
– You feel confident now.
My picks.
Justin Watkins, Alex White. Some props from William Hill on the Raiders offense and Ashton Jeanty in particular. PFF just had a graphic out. They have Jeanty projected for 1,631 total yards and 10 touchdowns in 2025. On the rushing, you can bet with William Hill over under 1,250 rushing yards. Check that. Over. Plus 190. Over plus 190. Wow. You want to do that? Over 1,250 yards with Jeanty.
So you sent a list of a whole bunch of Raiders props that are all season-long props. They're all plus money props. So we'll start there. The closest odds were they'll score one touchdown every regular season game. And I can't believe that that's their best odds on there, because they're playing in a division with three of the best defenses in the league. And the idea that they're going to score a touchdown every time, I'm not there with that. So to me, the best bet on the board there is the Gentee. He's going to get 1,250 yards or more. Not because I necessarily think he's going to do it, but I think he's going to get every opportunity to do it. Now, he's taken a huge workload in college, and so I don't know that he's going to be able to sustain a full season without injury, but so far he's been remarkably reliable in his career.
Last 15 seconds. I think Bowers over 1,250 yards is a little rich. It is plus 350.
I mean,
can you get that high?
There's 17 games now, right? Like 1250 isn't what 1250 used to be. And what do you have, 1180 last year? So he's right there. But Geno Smith doesn't use a tight end as much as other quarterbacks.
Justin, we appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Coming back with Alex White, John Von Tobel will be in to talk a lot of NFL.
Live from the Battleborn Broadcast Center, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
All right, time for Johnny Von Tobel with Alex White and Cofield here on a Wednesday. He is the host of our 8 a.m. show, JVT Saturday Football Preview Show at Westgate. JVT, what's going on, buddy?
Nothing. I mean, I'm just more curious why Alex White was going so easy on Justin Watkins a couple minutes ago. Did he claim that Clemson was a 6-point favorite at some point? What the hell are we doing?
He gets confused. He's not a borderline pro like you are.
I don't think I'm borderline pro. I think I just pay attention.
Well, sometimes he's going to gaff on the lines. We're here for that, to correct him. Speaking of gaffing on the lines, the consensus picks in the Westgate Week 1 of the College Super Contest, not so good.
No, they went 1-6. For those who aren't familiar with it, you got to take 7 in the college contest. So 1-6, not particularly great. It escapes me as to what the 1 was, but it did not go particularly well. I think it was Georgia Tech, now that it comes back to me, on the road against Colorado. Which is interesting, too, because if you kind of go through the field, and I was going through this, and I outed a very well-known tout and handicapper and professional gambler that is known around town, Steve Fezzik. I think he's got 9 entries in it. And this is not a shot at Steve. It's just there are, I think, more, I guess we'll call them sharper minds in the college football contest. A lot of sharper minds were very excited about betting into this thing. So you would think maybe this would be like a contest where you look at the consensus picks and be like, all right, let's go. There's a lot of great minds in this thing. Not the case for Week 1, but there's still plenty of time for that to bounce back.
Good competition. They got over 1,000 people for that college football super contest. Good job by John Murray and the folks down at Westgate and Superbook. All right, let's hit some NFL. We'll hit a bunch of NFL games here and then get to a couple of college plays. Let's start out with the Bengals and the Browns.
All right, so I think this is pretty interesting for many reasons. I wanted to talk about this from a survivor standpoint, too, as Westgate does have a survivor contest. There's multiple survivor contests now in town. So many people were burned by the Bengals, obviously, last year, multiple turns at the beginning of the season, that it is almost now a contrarian selection to go with the Bengals from a survivor standpoint, maybe even lay it as well against Cleveland. But I think this is actually one of those where you might want to consider it a little bit more. We had a great spot, and we have a bunch of partners over at Pool Genius over at VSIN. We were talking about this from the standpoint of, like, survivor myths. And you'd be surprised that, you know, in divisional games, these teams that are in these spots that are favorites of, like, 5 to 6.5 points, Steve, win at a higher clip than non-divisional favorites of about 5 to 6.5 points. And that would be the Cincinnati Bengals there that fall into that category. I also think that they're treating this like, dude, if there is a team that has been louder about maybe one or wanting to get off to a good start, not maybe, you point them out to me, because I don't think there is. And I actually likened it to LSU and Clemson, which is, right, every time Brian Kelly stepped up to the mic in the offseason, it was like, dear God, I need to win this game. I have not won an opener at all. We have tiger paw prints on the punching bags and everything. And then here we have the same thing where every time Zach Taylor and Joe Burrow have opened the mic, it's, dear God, we've been awful at the beginning of the season. Like, I think you get a Herculean Super Bowl type effort from Cincinnati in this game against the lowly Browns. So I'm really interested in Cincinnati from a survivor standpoint. If you're in a pool, I'm in a couple, and also just in the fact of maybe laying it in a spot against the Browns team that I think sucks, and I think Joe Burrow is beyond out to pasture when you talk about being a serviceable NFL quarterback.
Do you like the Bucs against the Falcons?
You know, I would lean in that direction. In the big picture, I love the Bucs. Yeah, I've got a ticket on them to be the number one seed in the NFC. I think that they're a team that's going to be very dangerous offensively. I think you could probably question whether or not this offense is going to be effective. But I think in this spot, too, especially when that under that key number is still available for Tampa Bay, to me, I'd be in that direction. We obviously know Caleb McGarry is injured for the Atlanta Falcons. That's your blindside protector for Michael Penix, obviously being a southpaw. It's a pretty big deal here. We still don't know what Penix is. And I know that Baker Mayfield's one of the best quarterbacks in the league, full stop. And I think that this is going to be enough for them to go out and potentially win. I know a lot of people might be turned off because it's a road spot, but I don't think home field's worth that much anymore. I have it less than 1.5. I don't think you're that phased by having to go on the road to true spot, even in a divisional game. So to me, it would be Bucks or nothing.
JVT, I'm with you with Tampa Bay long term. I've been saying it. They're going to be a great regular season team and could potentially steal that one seed. But let's go to the Titans here. What do you think about Cam Ward making his first start against the Broncos? Is this enough points to jump in with the Titans here?
So I don't think so, and I was telling this to Stormy Bonatoni, Alex, you know, and I asked her the question, which is, can you create a worse situation for a team in week one than a rookie quarterback going to Denver to face one of the best defenses in the league? You know, you have to play in that thin air. It's going to be it's like a hitting a brick wall from a defensive scheme standpoint. I think it's a brutal spot for Tennessee, but 8 seems like a lot. So I think there's a couple of different ways to attack this. First off, there's a lot of like long teaser legs that are available out there, you know, for audience, you know, teasing up through key numbers is that long teaser, getting through 3, getting through that 7.5, 8.5 mark, or getting down through those. I think Denver is going to be like a pretty solid rock leg for a teaser. So to pair them up with the Jets, for example, that are sitting at 2.5. Pair them up with any of these teams that are in that range of those low totals. The Bears, for example, are a pretty good one, catching 1.5 and getting that up to 7.5. So I think I'm going to have quite a few teasers with the Broncos on them. And again, kind of invoking that survivor mentality, it's hard not to be tempted to be on the Broncos. I think they're going to be the most selected team, but they're going to be the most selected team for a reason. It's a brutal spot for the Tennessee Titans this weekend.
It really is. What do you think about the Saints here? And Spencer Rattler will get the start. I think that's just because it's easier to go from him than to Tyler Shuck, who we probably will see shortly. But Cardinals are laying 6.5 on the road against New Orleans.
So this is most likely going to be my survivor selection when you're talking about like looking out and selecting teams. When are you going to use them again? There's not that many spots for Arizona. There's going to be different spots for Denver. They get the New York Giants. They get the Raiders if the Raiders are falling apart. There's one more spot on their schedule you could potentially use. So, you know, you circle those and say, I can save Denver for down the road. I think this is it for Arizona. There's not many spots to use them. But I will say, I am curious. It is somewhat telling that the market has not full bore gone, you know, let's push this to 7. I think that you can read the market in certain ways and find out if you're somebody that respects sharp money that models that market. Hey, why isn't that the case? Maybe there's some trepidation in believing in Arizona, but Kyler Murray and the Cardinals have been much better at the beginning of the season than at the end of the season. Spencer Rattler's been abysmal. If you look at his last few starts last year, turnover-worthy play rate was insanely high. He was getting away with murder but not turning the ball over. If that continues, I think this is going to be a very ugly season and a very ugly game for the New Orleans Saints. So I do like the Cardinals under that touchdown, but for the most part, this is going to be my survivor selection for sure coming up this week.
John Von Tobel on the NFL. All right, Dolphins and your Colts.
So I think this is an overplay. If you've kind of read the news and seen what's going on with both of these teams, their cornerback room, both of them, are absolute messes due to injury. The Dolphins have lost a couple of guys in that backfield, but mainly it was just a room that I don't think had a very high floor to begin with. And the Colts have been desperately signing guys off the street to fill out their cornerback position. They've been decimated with injury. And so I think that when you look at this, this sets up for a game in which you're going to have, I think, a pretty up and down affair. Now, maybe we'll see. Week one unders are kind of a thing for the most part. But remember, preseason scoring was up, and it was up by a good margin. We have these kickoff rules that are also in effect that might change things too, Steve. I think this lends itself, with all of the injuries, that this is going to be a high-scoring affair between these two, and very fair conditions as well, as this is going to be in Indianapolis, so you don't have to worry about weather or anything like that, any heat, anything of that nature. So I think this sounds like a high-scoring game to me, given everything you know about it. So I like this game over the total.
Jaguars and Panthers.
With the 3.5, I'm kind of surprised. I get Ike Ekwonu, the left tackle for the Carolina Panthers, likely isn't going to play here. I think it's an appendicitis or something like that. He had some sort of quick procedure that was done. But I think that I think Jacksonville is very good. I think Jacksonville can win the AFC South. I expect them to do so. I have a ticket on them at 3-1. Having said that, the team that I rode every single week last year post the Germany game, save for one, and that was when they were favorites against the Cowboys, was Carolina. I think the turnaround's real. I think Bryce Young has taken a legitimate step forward. I think they're good enough on offense to challenge a defense, which last year was 31st in EPA per play. That's Jacksonville. Both of these teams were very bad on defense. I don't think that Carolina is this much worse than Jacksonville. Going back to what we talked about, you know, I think home field's worth that about 1.5. I think these teams are closer to equals than Jacksonville being a solid favorite over them. So let's go with Carolina plus that 3.5, which is widely available now.
You can hear John Von Tobel each Saturday, 8 a.m. until 9. He gets you ready for the college football slate each and every week from the Superbook inside the Westgate. College football time, Alex?
College football time. Let's start out with the Rebels. JVT, what do you think UCLA laying points here in Las Vegas?
Yeah, so I've been talking about this. Came on with you guys last week, laid it with UNLV against Sam Houston, and thought that was a pretty good spot for them. That the market overreacted a little bit. They got it done. I still didn't love what I saw defensively. I thought if they had taken on a more adequate opponent, that Sam Houston was not able to take advantage of some of the opportunities given to them in the secondary because of lackluster quarterback play. You can say what you want about Nico Yamaleava, but he's a pretty solid quarterback talent-wise. And if given the opportunity, I think he's going to be able to take advantage. And as somebody who's very high on Utah, I am not looking at that game and saying UCLA is awful. I'm looking at it and saying Utah is everything I expected them to be. I think UCLA is going to be the spot to be able to get this done. So I laid 2.5 with UCLA. Also wouldn't say no to bet this over, but the market's against me here. Has bet it down about 2 or 3 points at last look. But I think UCLA is live to cover that number.
All right, we talked about this one with Justin Watkins just a little bit ago. What do you think about Oklahoma and Michigan?
So I just went back and watched this game again this morning, that being New Mexico and Michigan. And I think a lot of people are freaking out about that final score. If you really watch that game, New Mexico's two touchdown drives were buoyed by some rinky-dink penalties, catch on the right sideline for 20 yards that should have been called back because it was incomplete, and some really good trick plays that they deserve credit for. But in the other drives, every other drive, they were absolutely dominated. I thought Underwood looks great. I think it's crazy that this was 3 on the look-ahead line, game of the year line, and now all of a sudden, because John Mateer and the Sooners, I shouldn't say barely got by, but got by Illinois State, was it 35-7 or whatever it was, we're upgrading this team to this extent or downgrading Michigan? I think it's too much. I took 5 with Michigan.
John Von Tobel's with us here on Cofield and Company. One more college football look. Pittsburgh is laying 21.5 against Central Michigan.
Ooh. Is it down to 21.5? So when I was on the show this morning, it was 23.5. Because either way, I don't know how much you got to watch, Steve, State game, but Central Michigan, I think, is really interesting. Their head coach, his name escapes me, but comes from the Army staff, had been on there for a while, has brought over some of those option principles to this offense. They ran the ball down the throat of San Jose State, and I think preparing for that offense, which is not like a full option, but has some option principles to it, while also having one of your big rivalry spots, West Virginia, on the other side, I think it's a brutal spot for Pitt to be in here against an offense that I think is going to be tough to get ready for. So I'm really intrigued by Central Michigan. I really liked what I saw. I think they're going to be a pain in the ass, a la some of these service academies. And the fact that this is a sandwich spot for this team, I want to see if this gets up to 24. And I think I'll be on the chips this weekend.
Let's get a bonus play. What are we doing in the immediate with North Carolina? They're at Charlotte. That's a home game. The line, I mean, you want to talk about a line that got hit. This one got hit. It's now settled back. Last I saw was 13.5. North Carolina, Belichick at Charlotte.
I laid it. I mean, you talked about how it got hit. Some spots opened at 19 for this game. And then we got as low as 12.5. I understand it looks bad. But at the end of the day, that big of a downgrade, losing to a TCU team that could be a Big 12 winner. I mean, let's face it, the Big 12 is pretty wide open. I think that's it's really extreme. And I don't know if you saw Charlotte, but Charlotte is in not great shape at this point right now with the way their offense was operating. So I think to put this under 2 touchdowns like that, I am very comfortable giving Chapel Bill one more shot here, land 13.5. And what is kind of a bloodletting spot, right? We see these all the time in college. Maybe Bell has that mentality now to exit demons after a tough loss.
Listen to JBT, Westgate Superbook, 8 a.m. every Saturday for the beginning of the college football day. John, thank you.